The hallway clock reads 5:20 a.m. The unit smells like sanitizer and coffee gone cold. She signs out a patient, tucks a blanket at the edges, and silences a beeping pump with a steady hand. The phone in her pocket buzzes again, a reminder she set last night to call home by 6. Her father takes his morning pill at 6:05. Miss it, and the tremor climbs. Miss it twice, and the day slips. Across town, a street comes awake. Buses hiss. A school crossing guard lifts an arm. She turns her car toward home and counts red lights. 6 minutes to the ramp. 9 to the corner store. 12 to the apartment. The math does not care that she has not slept. The math does not care that a double shift pays the rent. It only counts. Here is the question the week keeps asking. How long can a person carry crisis at work and crisis at home before the load becomes a harm no one intended? Chapter 1. The Hidden Double Shift. The charge nurse dismissed the night crew at 5:40. Clipboards closed. Gloves snapped off. The room across from the desk had gone quiet after a hard hour. She signed her last chart with slow, neat letters and whispered goodbye to the patient's daughter who had stayed through the dark. Outside, the air held a thin chill that meant sunrise would be clear. She walked fast to the car and rubbed sleep from her eyes. The first call went to her brother. It rang 4 times and dropped. The second call went to the neighbor who checked on her father when the week ran tight. Voicemail. She ended the call and pulled onto the road. Her name is kept private by request. She is 36. She is a nurse in an emergency department that sees more people than it has beds. She is also the only child living near her father after a stroke 2 years ago. She works 3/12s and the extra hours that keep the lease current. At home, she measures blood pressure, sets alarms, and watches for the slow creep of confusion that comes with tired days. Host aside, many listeners live some version of this double. Paid work. Unpaid care. One body doing both. The show will use the term caregiving to mean both relatives and non-relatives who provide daily help without formal pay. The red light at Oak and Third held too long. She checked the pillbox in her mind. Monday row. Morning slot. A small round tablet that steadies the tremor. The doctor's sheet says take with water and food. She kept crackers in every drawer. Traffic slowed near the overpass. A bus merged. She took the exit and drove past the grocery. The clock ticked toward 6. She parked, climbed the stairs, and pushed the door with her hip. Inside, the apartment was warm from the radiator that never quite turned off. Her father sat at the table with a newspaper folded to the sports page from 2 days ago. He lifted his head and smiled. "You made it," he said. "Barely," she said. "Let's get breakfast going." She set the pill by the glass. He swallowed and chased it with water. She buttered toast and cut it into triangles. He ate 2 pieces and left crumbs like a map. She ate what was left and set a second alarm for 9. Facts first. Trauma can mean a single event or an ongoing exposure to fear, pain, or loss. Burnout describes a state of exhaustion tied to work that does not resolve with normal rest. Compassion fatigue describes the cost of caring when the stream of need does not slow. Secondary traumatic stress names what can happen when a person hears or sees the pain of others so often that their body begins to react as if the event happened to them. These terms can overlap. They are not diagnoses in this story. They are plain words for heavy loads. She washed dishes and watched the steam curl from the sink. Her phone lit with a message from the hospital. A shift was open on Friday. The word urgent flashed in the subject line. She turned the phone face down and breathed through her nose. Money had a way of speaking like that. Simple. Direct. Hard to refuse. At 9, she settled her father on the couch with a sweater and the radio tuned to the oldie station. She pulled the blackout shade in the bedroom, set an alarm for 11:30, and closed her eyes. Sleep arrived like a slide into warm water. It left like a door slam. The alarm rang. Her heart thudded. She sat up and found the floor with her feet. Host aside, sleep debt stacks up fast for shift workers. It also stacks for caregivers who wake at night to turn, lift, or calm a loved one. When both roles sit on the same person, the deficit can become a safety risk. By noon, she had started laundry, paid a bill, and called the clinic to confirm a follow-up appointment. The scheduler said the earliest was next month. She marked the date and set another reminder. She boiled pasta and steamed carrots. Her father ate half and dozed in the chair. The room grew quiet except for the hum of the fridge. In the afternoon, the tremor eased. He told a story from his years at the plant. The one about a machine that never worked right until they tightened a belt no one thought to check. She laughed at the part where he says it was not talent, only patience. He closed his eyes with a small smile. Near three, a different pressure rose. The missed nap pressed on her skull. The Friday shift email pressed on her thoughts. The rent was due in 9 days. The pharmacy had shorted one refill last week. Prices had climbed. She made a list on a yellow pad. Groceries. Copay. Bus pass. She added a line called maybe and wrote coffee with Jen. She stared at the word and drew a box. A small square felt bold. This is where numbers show their hand. More than 1 in 5 adults in the country provides care to a family member or friend on a regular basis. Many of those caregivers also work full-time. The work is unpaid and often invisible. It does not appear on a resume with a title. It appears as gaps. It appears as late arrivals and early exits that get written up. It appears as quiet shame when the boss asks if you are committed. Host aside, the show will cite public survey figures in Chapter 2. Today the point is the lived pattern. The double shift is common. The strain is real. Near 4 she walked to the pharmacy while her father napped. The sky had turned bright with fall light. Leaves clicked along the curb. Inside the store the line moved slow. She stood under the humming fluorescence and tried not to sway. The tech at the window asked her to verify the address. She did. The refill was not ready. She could come back in an hour. She nodded and stepped aside. An hour stretched. She sat on the bench near the blood pressure machine and watched the cuff inflate on a stranger's arm. It beeped and printed a small slip. She read the numbers without meaning to. The stranger crumpled the paper, threw it in the bin, and walked out with a bag of chips tucked in his arm. She closed her eyes and counted to 10. Back home, her father was awake and cheerful. He asked for the radio to be turned a little louder. She turned it up and set a glass of water by his chair. She looked at the clock. She would need to leave again for the pharmacy. She would need to plan dinner. She would need to decide about Friday. The decision bent toward yes. Money bends decisions. She opened the email and typed a reply. She paused and deleted the line that said she was available. She wrote a new line that said she could take 8 hours, not 12. She pressed send before she could take it back. Host aside, small boundary lines can change outcomes. A shorter shift may mean a safer drive home. It may also mean a smaller paycheck. The trade is real. Listeners who carry similar loads often talk about trades that never feel clean. The evening moved in gentle steps. She picked up the refill. She reheated soup. She checked the pillbox and marked the chart on the fridge. She set a timer for a call to the clinic billing office. A mistake from last month had lingered and grown. The person on the phone spoke in a clipped voice and placed her on hold twice. The correction would take 5 to 7 business days. She thanked the person and ended the call. Her chest felt tight for a moment and then eased. Near 9, she sat at the small kitchen table with her yellow pad. She wrote 3 lines that did not make a list. The first said the body is tired. The second said the mind is on alert. The third said there is no off switch. She tapped the pen against the margin and thought about the machine in her father's story. The fix was not talent. It was patience and a checked belt. This chapter names the stakes without a fix. It names the rising risk when the same person is asked to remain calm and competent at work while also holding care at home. It names the thin line where strain becomes harm. Harm can look like a near miss at a red light. Harm can look like a sharp word at the bedside. Harm can look like a forgotten dose on a day when the hands shook more than usual. Before bed, she set the alarms again. 6:05 for the pill. 8 for the call. 10 for the ride share to the appointment that was still weeks away, but had a note that said confirm transport. She brushed her teeth and looked at her face in the mirror. The skin under her eyes held a gray shadow that did not lift. She shook her head once and turned off the light. In the living room, her father folded his newspaper. He said he was proud of her. He said he knew the days were long. She sat beside him for a minute and held his hand. The radio played a song he used to hum when she was small. She hummed along and felt the chords settle in her chest. The night did not promise rest. The night promised more hours. She lay down and listened to her breath. The alarms glowed like small moons on the nightstand. She closed her eyes and counted the space between each inhale and exhale. She counted to 10 and back to 1. She slept. Repetition audit. The chapter introduces the nurse caregiver, defines key terms once and sets stakes through concrete scenes. Prior facts are not restated beyond a single-line summary of risk. Exit line. The alarms waited for morning. The load would not move by itself. Chapter 2. When systems lean on exhaustion. The van pulled to the curb at 7:40 a.m., east side, a weekday in late fall. A home health aide named Mariella checked the address on a clipboard and rang a bell with her elbow. She wore scrub pants, a gray hoodie, and a fabric mask printed with small blue dots. Her first client needed help with a shower and a safe transfer to a chair by the window. Her second client lived two bus lines away. Her third client had texted at 5:50 to ask if the appointment could shift by an hour. It could not. The agency scheduling system did not flex. Mariella's day ran in blocks of 45 and 60 minutes. Travel time paid at a lower rate. Missed buses cut into breaks. Delays rolled downhill and stacked. She kept a bottle of hand gel in her pocket and a granola bar in the side pouch of her bag. She said she had worked through two winters and one spring wave when the city sirens felt like a constant tone. She said the work mattered, but the strain stuck to her bones. "People think care is soft," she said as she wrapped a blood pressure cuff. "It is heavy. You lift. You hold. You watch for falls. You listen when someone is scared. Your body is at work and your mind is at work too." The apartment smelled of soap and mint. A kettle clicked on. Sun spilled across the rug. Mariella moved steady through her tasks. She checked a med list taped inside a cabinet door. She recorded the morning pulse. She filled a pill organizer that had cracked along one hinge. She found tape and fixed it. The client, a retired bus driver with a bandaged ankle, told a story about the route that ran to the stadium. He smiled when he reached the part where he met his wife on a rainy day. Mariella smiled back and set a timer on her phone. She would need to leave in 9 minutes to catch the next bus. Host aside. The show uses the word system to mean the combined pressures of wage rules, software, leave policies, transit, and clinic access that shape a day before any person makes a choice. The second scene began at a strip mall daycare that also offered elder day services 3 mornings a week. The parking lot filled in short bursts. A woman named Kendra stepped out of a silver sedan with a child on her hip and a laptop bag on her shoulder. She was 39, a project coordinator at a manufacturing firm, and part of what people call the sandwich generation. She dropped her daughter at the preschool door and drove 3 blocks to her mother's building to set out breakfast and morning pills. She checked the stove and the door locks twice. She placed a sticky note by the sink. She backed out of the driveway and counted the minutes to her first meeting. Her company allowed 2 days a week of remote work. The policy existed on paper. In practice, team leaders set their own rules. Her manager believed people focused better at the office. Kendra asked for an exception on Tuesdays, the day the Elder Day program ran short staff. The answer was a soft no followed by a sentence about fairness. She stopped asking and began to arrive late on Tuesdays. The point system recorded each late arrival. The record summoned a meeting. The meeting came with a warning. She did not qualify for paid family leave under her firm's plan. She earned too much for one income test and too little to hire private help. She built a calendar that looked like a game board. Color blocks for meetings and care. Arrows for travel. Notes to call the pharmacy and update the school. She slept with her phone face down and the ringer on high. "I do not want to be a problem," she said near the copy machine that printed to a communal tray. "I want to do my job and care for my mother and raise my kid. The math feels simple until the rules show up. Then I am out of moves." The third voice came from a church basement on the west side. Metal chairs scraped on tile. Coffee steamed in a large silver urn. A community organizer named Leon stood under a postcard board filled with flyers for clinics and food banks. He ran a weekly circle for caregivers. The group had started small and grown until the chairs no longer fit a single ring. People spoke about rides that fell through, workers who quit without notice, bills that did not make sense, and the nagging sense that the city ran on their invisible time. Leon spoke in measured lines. He said the load was not only personal. It was structured. He named the meeting-go-round of agencies that referred people back to one another. He named intake forms that took 90 minutes and reset when a browser crashed. He named the way short staffing in hospitals and long waits in primary care shifted tasks onto families. He said people gave care because they loved the person. That did not make the structure fair. Host aside, Listeners will hear numbers in a moment. Before numbers, hear the pattern. When rules assume a surplus of time, the system borrows from the body of whoever will give it. At midweek, the reporting shifted to documents. A set of public survey tables summarized caregiving time in hours per week and the share of workers who provided regular care while holding a job. A labor brief described how unpredictable scheduling increased stress. A white paper laid out the economic value of unpaid care in ranges rather than one headline number. Each source had margins of error and footnotes. Each source warned against simple conclusions. What stood out was not one big figure. It was the shape. Hours went up with severity of need. Hours went up with distance to services. Hours went up when jobs demanded night or rotating shifts. The shape looked like a line that bent higher when supports fell away. A separate packet of records arrived after two emails and one phone call. It contained grievance logs from a mid-size employer that used a point system for attendance. The logs had been anonymized. The stories behind the numbers still showed. A worker lost points for arriving late to a shift after a parent's transport van did not come. A worker lost points for leaving early when a school called about a fever. A worker lost points during a week when a clinic rescheduled a test twice. The policy did not consider care as a valid excuse. The policy said that only approved leave counted. The policy said that scheduling coverage came first. The midpoint turn came from a pilot in a different part of the city. A nonprofit clinic that partnered with a hospital and a union local had tested a small change on one floor. The unit posted a shared rota for two kinds of micro support. The first was a two-hour block of predictable respite time that rotated among staff who were also caregivers at home. The second was a relief buddy system that allowed a worker to step off the floor for 30 minutes during high-stress days without risking a mark against attendance. The pilot also added one quarterly training on trauma-informed practices that was kept short and practical. The trial ran for 12 weeks, ended in early summer, and produced a thin but clear result. Incidents of near misses in documentation dropped. Sick calls dipped slightly. Staff reported a higher sense of control over their time. No one claimed the pilot fixed the load. People said it helped. A charge nurse who helped set the rota wrote in her notes that the idea faced pushback at first. Managers worried the floor would fall behind. Some staff without care duties worried about fairness. The notes show that the team addressed both concerns by making the rota transparent and by tying the relief buddy to moments that served the whole unit, like rush discharges. The nurse wrote that the hardest part was the calendar. The easiest part was the conversation it opened. "We talked like adults," she wrote. "We said what we needed and what we could give. Host aside, a turn does not need to be dramatic. It needs to be real. A small block of predictable time can bend a week." The reporting returned to Mariella at dusk outside a bus stop shelter. A wind pulled at the corner ads. Her phone buzzed with a message about a Saturday shift. She did not have to say yes. She said she would, because the rent rose in January. She said her body ached at night in her wrists and lower back. She said sometimes she forgot what day it was. When asked about leave, she laughed without humor. The agency offered sick time on paper. Requests had to be entered through a portal that worked best on a desktop. She did not own a desktop. She used her phone at a library to fill out forms when she had 2 hours free. The portal timed out. The request disappeared. She wrote the date on a paper calendar taped to her wall and hoped the manager would remember. Kendra's week reached a thin edge on a Thursday at 3:10 p.m. A meeting ran long. Her phone lit with a call from the Elder Day Center. Her mother had become agitated after lunch and wanted to go home early. The center could not hold her against her will. Kendra parked the meeting. She drove across town. By the time she reached the center, her mother was calm again and humming a song from church. Kendra signed a release and drove home behind a slow truck. Her daughter's school called to say pickup had started. She looked at the time and felt the skin under her eyes tighten. She arrived at school 14 minutes late. The staff member at the door wrote the time on a clipboard. Kendra nodded and said thank you. She drove home and cried once the door closed. The organizer Leon held a circle that night. The room held the faint smell of bleach and coffee. People spoke in short bursts about sleep that came in shards and the way the mind stayed lit even in the dark. A man in a ball cap said he had made a safety plan for the drive home after late shifts. He kept cold water in the car and pulled over if his vision fuzzed. A teacher said she recorded questions for the next clinic visit into her phone while she walked the dog, because paper lists disappeared. A grocery clerk said she had traded shifts with a friend to attend an evaluation meeting for her father's benefits. She would pay the friend back with a ride to a specialist across town. Host aside, mutual aid fills gaps the policy did not reach. It should not carry the whole bridge. The chapter turned to a brief explainer. Trauma-informed practice in a workplace means three simple things. First, recognize that people may be carrying stress that is not visible. Second, avoid recreating harm through rigid rules that punish care. Third, build in small choices and predictable time where possible. The phrase can sound like jargon. In practice, it often looks like a humane schedule and a clear path to say, I need 15 minutes to reset. A human resources director at a logistics firm spoke on background. The firm had tried to reduce turnover by offering a bank of flexible hours that workers could draw from in 15-minute pieces. The director said the idea was not expensive. The problem had been manager buy-in. Some supervisors treated every request as suspect. The firm ran short trainings for supervisors and tracked use rates. Units where managers signaled trust saw fewer unscheduled absences. Units where managers signaled suspicion did not change. The director said the lesson was basic. If you build a door, she said, you have to leave it unlocked. At the city level, a small pilot offered caregivers a tiny monthly stipend and a transit card preloaded with fares. The stipend did not replace income. It covered bus rides and grocery runs without the choice between one or the other. A caseworker said the paperwork to qualify took 2 hours for a first-time applicant and did not always fit people with irregular incomes. The city planned to shorten the form. The workers who processed the forms already carried heavy caseloads. What should listeners take from the turn? The lever that moved was not a grand program. It was time. Predictable minutes. Small blocks that turned chaos into a plan. When those minutes appeared, safety rose. When they disappeared, risk returned. The chapter kept the focus on harm without scaring the air out of the room. A nurse on a different floor described a patient handoff that went sideways after a 13-hour shift. She caught the discrepancy on the drive home and called the unit. No one was harmed. The nurse did not sleep well that day. She said she felt like she had been driving a car with one eye closed. The metaphor fit too closely. A final scene returned to Mariella's apartment. She set out her clothes for morning. She stood in her small kitchen and stretched her arms overhead until her shoulders loosened. Her phone chimed. A text from the agency said a client had been added at 11:15 a.m. The address sat between two bus lines that did not connect. She would need to walk 20 minutes to make it. She stepped to her wall calendar and wrote the new time in neat print. She added a note in the corner. Drink water. Eat. Host aside. Bodies keep the score of the schedule. So do families. So does the work itself. Repetition audit. This chapter introduced new voices and avoided returning to the opening character. It traced barriers in scheduling, leave, and pay. It reported one pilot where small predictable time improved safety. It kept policy talk brief and practical. Exit line, the pattern is clear. When time is rigid, exhaustion pays the bill. When time bends, safety returns a little to the room. Chapter 3, Toward Repair. Morning returned with a thin blue light against the blinds. The nurse lay still and listened to the radiator click. In the next room, her father stirred and cleared his throat. She rose, set the kettle on, and opened the pillbox to the Friday row. A clean routine steadied her hands. Water. Toast. A small square of cheese. A glass of orange juice. He swallowed the round tablet and smiled at the tang. She checked the yellow pad from last night. The square around coffee with Jen still waited. She circled it once and let the ink sink into the paper. A square can be a promise. It can also be a test. The day's shape held. An 8-hour shift, not 12. A ride share there, and back to buy some minutes of rest. She packed a second granola bar and a spare phone charger. She set the radio to a familiar station and left a note by the kettle that said hot water at 10 and 2. She hugged her father and stepped into the hallway. Host aside, the chapter turns from strain to repair. Not a cure. A plan. We will hold to what is known, name what is unknown, and place responsibility where it belongs. At the hospital, she signed in and found the relief buddy board posted by the break room door. Colored magnets showed pairs for the day. Her name sat next to T, Jones in neat dry erase print. A column to the right listed two predictable blocks, 10:30 to 10:50, 2:15 to 2:45. She took a photo with her phone. The camera made a small shutter sound. The sound felt like a promise, too. The unit ran hot for the first hour. New admits. Discharges lining up. A monitor beeped, then calmed. She moved with practiced steps. She washed, charted, lifted, checked, and listened. She found the small mistakes that busy hands leave, like a label that needed a second look or a pump rate that blinked a number off. At 10:30, Jones tapped her shoulder. He had the board in hand. He gave her a nod toward the door. She walked the long hall to the stairwell where the air ran cool and quiet. She sat on the middle step and closed her eyes. She set a timer for 12 minutes. She breathed. In. Out. In. Out. She ate half the granola bar, drank water, and rolled her shoulders until the tight band across her back softened. She checked her phone once. Two messages. One from the pharmacy confirming a shipment for next week. One from Jen that said name the time. She typed tomorrow at 3 if the stars line up and press send. This is the pattern of repair at the level of one body. A pause. A drink. A small square on a page. It is not dramatic. It is real. The show widened the lens. Repair at the household level means a plan that fits the week, not a wish that fits a headline. Three pieces make the plan hold. A map of the load. A short list of non-negotiables. A short list of maybes. A map of the load can be a sheet of paper on a fridge. It can be a note app on a phone. It shows who needs help, when, and how long it takes. It includes travel time and wait time. It includes the time it takes to find a missing shoe or a missing form. It is honest. It writes down the minutes that people pretend are free. A short list of non-negotiables names the things that keep the roof on and the body safe. Sleep hours. Pills that must be taken a certain way. Bills with cutoff dates. Shifts that cannot move. This list is not a dream. It is an anchor. A short list of maybes names the pieces that can move without breaking the week. A store that delivers. A friend who can cover one school pickup per month. A church member who can sit for an hour on a Sunday. A ride service for medical visits that can be booked 2 days ahead. Maybes do not solve the load. They spread it. Host aside. Listeners write in with hacks. Keep them simple and kind. The point is not to optimize a life like a factory. The point is to protect the person inside the life. Repair at the workplace level looks like time made predictable and rules that do not punish care. The pilot from Chapter 2 showed two tools that fit on a whiteboard. Rotating respite blocks. Relief buddies. A third tool can ride along. A simple form that lets a worker bank small flex minutes and draw them in 15-minute bites without a manager turning the moment into a test. When these tools live only on paper, they do not work. They breathe when supervisors speak trust with their actions. Post the rota where people see it. Honor the blocks unless a true emergency hits. Make the relief buddy a skill that helps the whole unit by aligning it with busy windows like discharges. These are small moves. They change days. An HR director from a different firm sent a short email after our call. The note said the company's turnover had fallen a little since they added flex minutes and trained supervisors to use them. The note did not claim credit for more than it owned. It said the tools helped. It said the firm would keep going. Repair at the policy level is bigger. The show will not write new law in one paragraph. It will place accountability where it belongs. Cities and states can shorten forms that block aid. Transit agencies can align routes with clinics and day programs so a person does not lose 2 hours to a slow transfer. Health systems can staff navigators who are paid to sit with families and plan medicine refills so the month does not break on the 29th day. Leave programs can cover a wider set of workers. Stipends can be small and still matter. Each move makes time a little less rigid. Each move returns safety to the room. Back on the floor, the nurse used her second block at 2:15. She walked to the stairwell and called her father. He answered on the second ring. His voice sounded clear. He asked about dinner. She said she would bring soup. He said the radio played a song he liked. She said she would find it on the way home. They said goodbye. The call took less than a minute. It did not weigh on her mind through the next hour. That is the hidden value of a block. It is not only the minutes you use. It is the quiet that follows. Near for a new admit shifted the unit into a high gear. Staff moved fast. The nurse caught a detail on a med list that did not fit and asked the attending to review it. The team adjusted the order. Work like this depends on clear heads and clean eyes. It is better when the day holds one or two places to breathe. The show shifted to what is unknown. We do not know the exact number of near misses that never get logged because a worker drove home and could not face a form. We do not know the true economic value of unpaid care because the value changes with context and time. We do not know how many small pilots like the Rota Board fail because a champion leaves. These unknowns matter. They are not an excuse to wait. They are a prompt to measure better and to hold the gains you can make. Host aside, if you lead a team, your action list is short and clear. Make time visible. Build small flex. Train trust. Post the plan. Track outcomes. Share what you learned without spin. The nurse clocked out a little after 6 and rode home in the back seat of a rideshare. A golden light fell across the dashboard. The driver kept the radio low. The city moved by in slices. A corner store. A schoolyard. A field with late sun on the grass. She felt the day in her shoulders and in the soft behind her eyes. She did not feel the sharpness that had cut through last week. A small block had taken the edge off the blade. At home, her father sat at the table with the sports page from that morning. She set the soup to warm and sliced a pear. He told a fresh story about a game from years ago. They ate without hurry. After dinner, she wrote a short note on the yellow pad. It said call navigator. It said ask about automatic refills. It said check transit card balance. It said coffee with Jen at 3. When Jen arrived on Saturday, the two sat near a window in a small cafe with plants on every sill. The air smelled like cinnamon and fresh bread. They spoke about work in quiet tones. They spoke about their parents. They spoke about money and time and the feeling that plans have a way of slipping. They drew a map of help on a napkin. Jen could take a grocery run twice a month. The nurse could watch Jen's son on a Thursday evening when she had class. They shook on it as if it were a contract. It was. This is where the story lands. Repair is not a single act. It is a rhythm. Short blocks and clear maps. Friends who trade time. Supervisors who protect a rota. City workers who cut a form by half. Navigators who call the pharmacy before a refill lapses. The cost is not only money. The cost is attention. The return is safety. The show closed with a short action plan for listeners who carry load. Document the load. Write the minutes on paper for 1 week. Include travel and wait time. Include the time it takes to explain the same thing twice. Draw 2 lists. Non-negotiables. Maybes. Keep them short. Update them on Sundays. Use boundary language. Practice 1 sentence you can say at work. I can cover 8 hours, not 12. Practice 1 sentence you can say at home. I will set the pills at 6 and 9. I will not be able to answer the phone during the meeting at 10. Bank small rest. 12 minutes twice a day changes a week. Use a timer and a door that closes if one is available. If not, use a stairwell or a bench and a bottle of water. Build a small circle. 1 friend for rides. 1 for a pickup once a month. 1 for sitting on a Sunday. Trade time. Count it fair. Ask for a navigator. Many clinics and hospitals employ people whose job is to help with forms and refills. If the clinic says it does not, ask again. Use the word navigator. Ask the social work desk. Bring the rota to work. If you lead, post predictable blocks and pair relief buddies. If you do not lead, share this idea with someone who does. Keep the pilot small and measurable. Track near misses and sick calls before and after. Share what you find. Speak up about forms. When you meet a policy that steals time, note it and tell the person who can change it. Bring 1 fix that shortens the form. 2 pages instead of 4. Fewer resets on timeouts. Protect sleep. If you drive after a late shift, set a rule. Cold water in the car. Pull over if vision fuzzes. Call a friend for a 2-minute reset. Call what it is. If the week feels impossible, say so to someone with power over a schedule. The word impossible is not a failure. It is a warning label. Host aside, none of this is medical advice. It is basic care for the human person who does the caring. Seek licensed help for diagnosis or treatment. If you feel at risk of harm, call for help now. The nurse folded the yellow pad to a clean page. She wrote a line at the top and underlined it. The line said today's wait is shared. She pinned the page to the cork strip by the phone. She set her alarms for the morning and turned the radio low. Her father hummed along with a song from the 60s. The melody moved like an old river. Slow, steady, familiar, repetition audit. This chapter avoided reusing opening scenes and added only fresh beats. It closed loops on time blocks, maps, and pilots. It separated knowns from unknowns and gave a clear action plan across household, workplace, and policy. Exit line. Repair did not erase the load. It put more hands under it so one pair did not have to hold the weight alone.